Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Now, I'm starting to doubt that this is actually how computers work.
Okay. Yeah, this is the save game, dude. If you make it to the first save point, you got to delete your banking information to save your game. I come from the net, through systems, peoples, and cities. To this place, mainframe. My format, Guardian. To mend and defend. To protect my newfound friends, their hopes and dreams, and defend them from their enemies. And that's from Bob. Do you remember where that was from?
Me? Ethan? Or the listener? Is that a rhetorical for the listener?
I guess all of us here at the Lore Boys podcast. I'm James, and you are?
I'm Ethan. So, Pete, what do you think about what Jamie just said? Pete, buddy? Uh-oh. It seems like Pete has been involved in a terrible autoerotic asphyxiation incident. I don't think we're going to be able to get anything from him today, but we'll get the paramedics over there as soon as possible. Hopefully get him back for the next episode.
Yeah, I think I can see his bulging eyes blinking twice, so I think he's okay.
That's not the only thing I see bulging twice, if you know what I mean.
Yeah,
so, hi everybody. I know it's from Reboot, because I know we're talking about Reboot. I probably could have guessed it was from Reboot, but I can't say that for sure, because I never watched the show as a child. And a lot of what you said leading up to my format is Guardian might have made sense for us bringing a podcast to people. We are from the internet.
It's true. A lot of things in Reboot that come from the internet are bad, bad things, though. So we would probably be an enemy.
Also,
in the eyes
also
of...
true. Also probably pretty yep. true.
Yeah. Yeah, Reboot's like one of the first entirely 3D animated TV shows when it came out in 1994. I think it was the first in Canada. If not, it was very close to the first one.
Okay. 1984 seems really early for animated stuff, so.
Yeah, the first animated TV show ever fully 3D animated was VeggieTales in 1993.
Oh, okay. Way to go, Christians.
Yep. They led the way, as always.
I only ever watched VeggieTales when I accompanied people to church, because I grew up an atheistic sinner.
I went to that same church group, actually, with Matt Markham and the gang. And
Yeah.
Kim Webster would put on the VeggieTales and would make some pizza and have a good day.
Well, I'm amazed that you remember the youth pastor's name. But
Yeah, totally do. Yeah. So it came out in 1994. Toy Story was the first all 3D animated movie. And that only came out in 1995. So this came out in 1994, so it was really, really early.
Pre-Toy Story. Toy Story was the first all-animated movie, too, huh? I guess. I guess I can't think of what would have come first. But
yeah, before then, like, there was always some type of combination with live action. Like, even Jurassic Park, there was animated stuff in it, 3D animations, but it was, like, still Jeff Goldblum that wasn't an animated version of himself.
Are we sure there was 3D animated stuff in Jurassic Park? Because Steven Spielberg was, like, notoriously against 3D animation. And he was one of the guys that, got Tron disqualified from the Oscars because they used, like, CGI and special effects. So he was like, no, you can't get any awards because it's not real.
In one of the Reboot videos I watched today, they, like, used that as the video playing in the background when they were comparing it to other movies. So okay. I just used it as a reference. Like, specifically when they're running like across a field, apparently the backdrop is a green screen where they have dragons. That'd be crazy.
Different movie for sure. Yeah, Faye running in park.
They're kind of like dragons. They're just dinosaurs, though.
A pterodactyl is basically a dragon if a pterodactyl had access to magic spells, right?
Yeah, and imagine if it did.
Well, I mean, they never would have let that asteroid fuck them up, that's for sure.
It was actually just an evil pterodactyl who summoned the asteroid and destroyed all of them.
Oh, yeah. Okay. A pterodactyl.
Lore of Dinosaurs is next week.
Yeah, yeah. That's coming. Well, Lore of Dragons, you mean, right?
Oh, both. Yes.
Technically, both. So, presumably, an asteroid killed Reboot, right?
Well, Reboot killed Reboot, I'd say, but the first like three seasons were awesome. And then they had like a fourth season that was basically two movies that were split into like episodes so they could play them on the air.
And it did a huge, and maybe I'm like bearing the lead here, but it does like a huge time jump at one point, right?
Yeah. Around, I think it's the middle of the third season. That's when shit gets crazy.
Okay.
And we're going to cover the first, second, and third season.
Okay.
The first one, like very loosely, because it's super episodic. Everything is created and resolved by the end of every episode in the first season.
Okay.
Yeah. And then in the second season, they start to put a through line, which we'll talk about.
Cool.
And then into the third season. And we'll stop around the end of the third season because the fourth season to me gets kind of bonkers.
Okay.
But
yeah,
there's enough here.
So like I think I said earlier, I've never watched Reboot because I'm a simple country bumpkin who believes it when somebody tells me that dinosaurs are basically dragons. And we didn't have cable where when I grew up, we basically had three channels. So Reboot and YTV was not one of them.
YTV was like a lot of my childhood shows, dude. I feel bad for you. There's a lot of good ones there.
I think I got it when I turned like 13, 12 or 13, something like that. When we finally got satellite. So then I was able to watch it. But I guess for any of the American listeners, because I assume it was on American TV. Because
it was on YTV and ABC. I think those are both Canadian channels, but then it was released like later on Cartoon Network.
Okay. ABC. It was ABC, like ABC?
I think so.
The American Broadcasting Company is not a Canadian network, believe it or not.
Oh. Well, then that must have been where it was released. Every time I looked it up, it had a Cartoon Network on logo in the bottom when I was watching clips.
Yeah, yeah.
So I assume that's how it hit the States, but ABC makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, it could have it could have been both. Cartoon Network could honestly be a subsidiary of ABC. So not that I know. I'm not even positive that it's American Broadcast Company, but it's definitely American company.
Okay. Also, I want to give a big shout out to Anthony, one of our fans. This episode is actually heavily based on a script that he sent in. I ended up changing some things to be more in the Lore Boy's voice, but this episode wouldn't exist without him and his hard work. I used a lot of his script for source material and even stole a few things from it. So
yeah,
thanks so much, Anthony.
Thanks a ton. I think we mentioned it on the Space Marines episode that we did, that somebody had sent in a script and we thought it was super, super cool. And if any of you guys want to send us stuff like that, contact@loreboys.com is probably the best way to do it. Whatever you guys send us, if we think it's cool and think it's up to snuff, then we'll adapt as best we can and try and put our own little spin on it, but try and bring it to you. So super exciting. I assume that he's American because most of our listeners are American, so I assume that a fair number of Americans have seen it. Like you said, it was on Cartoon Network, right? So
I think he may be Canadian. His last email, he thanked us for the shout out. I thanked him, and then he thanked us back, and he said, to continue the Canadian standoff, I'll thank you back. Yeah, so he may be Canadian because we keep thanking each other.
Okay, yeah. And now we're just stuck in a reply all loop where it's you thank him, then he thanks us, then I thank him, then he thanks us. Then, yeah, okay.
Yes. Yeah, that's where we are. The animation for Reboot was like kind of crude back then in 1993. So the whole show took place within a computer, which kind of fit the boxy type animations and things like that, because everything was in a computer world. So,
yeah, I mean, like, I think even for a TV show, if you compare it to like Toy Story, which is like Pixar, the preeminent 3D animation studio in the world, who did Toy Story like a year later, I think they did a really good job for 1993. Like the Blizzard's Diablo 2 and StarCraft cutscenes, you know, 6-7 years later were much, much worse than Reboot was. So,
yeah, that was really great. And just like, there's a lot of hours of it out there, right? Like in a season, there's more hours of animation and probably making less money than a Toy Story. Yeah. So it's really impressive for what it was.
Yeah, fully agree. Mm-hmm. Yep. Do you know who it was done by? I know it was Canadian, but...
Yep. That was my next point. It was produced by Vancouver-based Mainframe Entertainment.
Oh, and... Okay, well, again, maybe burying the lead, but Mainframe's a character, right?
That's the name of the city they live in.
Oh, that's the city. Yep. Okay.
Yeah. While Mainframe Entertainment was in charge of the show, it was amazing. I used to stay up till 9 p.m. with my mom when I was like 6 years old to watch this thing. And like, it was always super special because she was really into it. She worked with computers at work. I was really interested in video games, and the whole show takes place within a computer, and it kind of gives an interesting perspective on what you might be doing to a computer whenever you launch a game or something like that.
Exactly.
Which, it's all fictional, of course, but it was really fun.
It's fictional. Come on.
Yeah.
I think I mean, again, never watched it as a kid, but I was really interested in computers as a kid. So the few chances I did have to watch it, I always thought it was really interesting. I thought, you know, part of me probably believed a fair amount of it was actually how computers worked. And like, it's very human to just personify like inanimate objects like a computer, right? And be like, oh, it's thinking or whatever. My robot vacuum is working so hard today, you know?
Very much so. Yeah. There's a ton of pop culture references that flew like way over my head whenever I was watching it. Like, there's like Star Wars, like Monty Python, a bunch of different video games, like tons of stuff that I would never have noticed, but it's just deeply entrenched in the show. They have like one opener that is basically just James Bond. Like, it's the Firewall episode, and it has like the credits going slowly and like fire in the background and like this James Bond-esque music that I just thought was a cool intro when I was a kid, but it was very much a James Bond intro.
Why did Bob shoot me? Right down the barrel of my gun.
So as we mentioned, the story is set within Mainframe. This is the city that the whole show pretty much takes care, or at least the first couple seasons takes place in. And it's a circular city. It kind of looks like if you looked at Midgar from the top down, like city planning wise, it's just, there's like a center and a bunch of, I don't know what you call them, like pie slices of city all the way around.
Okay, wedges or pie slices, I think is fine. Trivial Pursuit winning tokens.
Yep. The technical term.
Yeah. Midgar is, for everyone listening at home, excuse me, is Final Fantasy VII city, which is circular, kind of divided into wedges or slices.
Yeah, except I don't think it has like the slums underneath the main city type thing, but
I mean, maybe
it's just
maybe that was intended for season 5, right?
Never know.
They
were
going below Mega Frame Mainframe to find that it was actually Midgar, and then below Midgar was the slums, right?
Yeah. The Mainframe is set within the user's personal computer. So the user could be any one of us, and this is the personal computer that we would have at home back in the day with our giant boxy monitor, our huge tower, and our dial-up modem. Yeah. And
that we all had running, 12 megabytes of RAM and, you know.
Exactly.
256 kilobyte hard drive. Whew.
All the main characters in the game are sprites. And then the lesser characters are binomes, and they're either ones or zeros.
Oh, yeah, there's like little like claptrappy robots, right?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so the ones are actually just like a rectangle, which is like three squares on top of each other, so the top square can move as a head. Okay. And the zeros are like these little balls with legs. Oh. But they're just ones and zeros running around.
So they're actually like broken into. Okay.
And those are just like the NPCs, like the townspeople. Most of them aren't very important. The actual sprites have humanoid shapes and like bright colored skin. Like Bob is the main dude. He's the defender. He's the guardian of the city Mainframe. He's completely blue.
Yeah, he's the guy you quoted at the beginning saying, "I'm the guardian, the defender of the Mainframe," right?
Yep. Yeah. He's the lead protagonist for the first two seasons. He comes in in the fourth season, which I'm not really going to cover, it gives his like origin story. He comes from a supercomputer, so he's like super advanced, and then he comes to this personal computer, and he just he's the Norton antivirus. Yeah. And
so he was once used to predict the weather, and now he's used to, I don't know, punch viruses, I guess.
Yeah. Whenever you just download stuff that you shouldn't be downloading, he gets rid of it. Yeah.
Which I mean, Lord knows I could have used as a child, but I was pretty deep in the Napster Kazaa LimeWire game as a kid, and I'm sure those computers took a beating.
Yeah, man. That was not System of a Down Chop Suey that I just downloaded. Yeah, no. This is a trouble, yeah.
How come it says install whenever I download Linkin Park? Hmm. I don't know. Oh, well, I'll try installing the MP3 file.
Yeah. Wait, this MP3 is an EXE. What's going on?
That's strange, huh?
Yeah. Better click on it. Yeah. So Bob's the main protector of the city. Then there's Dot, Matrix, and Enzo Matrix. Dot is the older sister, the love interest of Bob, and Enzo is the younger brother of Dot and Bob's biggest fan.
And they're green skinned.
Yeah.
And Enzo wears a backwards hat, right?
That's right. Yeah. Dot used to be a little bit too sexy, and the TV made her boob into a mono boob, not two separate boobs, because too suggestive for the children.
Okay, I'm gonna be right back. I'm just looking up Dot mono boob, you said?
Yeah, that's right. It was too sexy. And they made like an allusion to the entity that made them change things. Okay. It's like the board of regulations or something. And at one point they had all the ones and zeros singing a song to the board, and they were very self-aware and just like laughing at the fact.
Yeah. I mean, calling the main city in your show, naming it after your animation studio, makes me feel like you're probably a little meta, but I guess it would also make sense for an entire city that's inherently connected to the internet to just be kind of in on in jokes, like you said, like the Monty Python references and all that stuff. Like, it's probably all downloaded from the internet at some point, right?
Right. Yeah.
Those early 90s Monty Python fan forums.
There's a few other fun characters you might remember, like Mike the TV. He had like a big loud voice, and he'd always say, "For only one low price of $9.99, and he's just like, he was super loud, and he was kind of like annoying but funny.
Okay, yeah. The I'm just comparing to other, I guess, childhood shows, annoying characters, but I immediately thought of Sticking Around and the guy who's like, "Hey, you guys."
Yeah, Mike the TV he doesn't really play a side. He ends up working with some of the bad guys and some of the good guys at different times. And,
okay.
There's a dog named Frisket. He's just a dog. That's cool.
I remember the dog for sure. So Mike the TV is a sprite, right? I guess all these characters are sprites?
Yeah, because they don't look like ones or zeros. Mike the TV looks like a TV. And he makes a lot of TV references, too, so he's like aware of what's on television, so he can actually make jokes about it and stuff.
Okay, yeah. He definitely does look like a TV. I am looking at him now, so.
Yeah, he's like a TV. His face is within the screen of the TV.
Oh, I found a sexy Mike the TV.
Uh-oh.
That's nice. Clearly don't have Safe Search on this computer.
There's a wise old man named Fong, who's the leader of the mainframe. He's the wise dude that sees the problems coming or explains the technical issues.
Yeah.
That's his role within. I think he's like the head of command.com at the principal office. Okay. So he's like, he's in charge of system 32 or whatever.
Yeah. He's the central processing unit, essentially.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And there's two. Those are most of the good guys, along with a bunch of ones and zeros. And then there's two main antagonists in the reboot universe, and their siblings. First is Hexadecimal.
Okay.
And she's like a female virus, and she has like those drama masks that you might see like whenever you see
She had like feet on her head, right?
I don't know about feet on her head, but she has a mask. I don't remember the feet.
I'll look her up one sec. You keep describing Hexadecimal.
Okay. Well, she's a female virus. She's tall and slender. She wears different masks. Like, one of the really cool things that she did, and I remember from when I was a child, like, kind of scared me a bit, is she had the smile on, and she's talking to someone, and she waved her hand past, and as her hand passes, it goes to, like, the really scary with all the fanged teeth and, like, glowing eyes. Yeah.
I posted a picture of her. It's not really feet, but I can see why I remember it as feet.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of, like, weird hair. I don't know.
Yeah, it's like kind of like a funny hat, yeah, or something. Yeah,
little horn, like horns, but like trumpet horns on top of her head. You know.
Yep.
She's got a hat full of clarinets.
Yeah, she definitely has like five spikes with like almost like feet sticking on the end, but they're not like toad feet, but they're. I can see where feet come from.
Oh, when you said toad feet, I thought you meant like the feet on a toad, like.
No, like toad feet with toes.
Yeah. And I was like, definitely not toad feet. I don't know why you would mention that at all, honestly. And then I was thinking about Mushroom Kingdom Toad, and I was wondering what his feet look like, because I'm pretty sure he wears shoes, right?
I don't know, but we got to get some feet pics going.
Yeah, toad. Okay, I'm just going to Google one more thing. It's toad Mushroom Kingdom feet pics.
Actually, the funny thing is, when you take off his mushroom hat, actually a foot in there.
Oh my god, when you take off when you take off his shoes, it's two little mushrooms. That's so weird. Although very erotic, I gotta be honest.
I'm into it. Yeah. Fucking, I'll download more of that on LimeWire later.
Oh, it's foot fungus, you get it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep, I do. Yeah, so that's the one bad guy, or bad girl, I guess, is Hexadecimal. And her main motivation is just create disorder. She's kind of like chaotic evil. She's not always working alongside the other dude who is Megabyte, but she just likes creating disorder however she can.
Oh, Megabyte. Does he kind of look like Zurg from Toy Story?
Yeah, he has a big old jaw. He's got like these gnarly teeth.
Oh, yeah.
He's pretty Chad-like, like he's got a big,
Chad.
Yeah, huge jaw, like a V-shaped body and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah. He's clearly got lightning powers in one episode. He's clearly got Wolverine claws in another episode.
He has Wolverine claws, that's like his main thing.
Oh, yeah.
And then he takes on different shapes, like depending on, he's always has a new plan on how to mess up Mainframe. He's a virus, they're both viruses, Hexadecimal and Megabyte. Okay.
And he's like lawful evil, right?
Yeah, his main thing is he wants destruction. I'm not sure if he'd be lawful, but he just wants to destroy.
Yeah,
that's his main thing.
So, true evil or chaotic evil, then?
Yeah, and whenever their motivations line up, that's when stuff gets really tough for the protagonists, because fighting both of them at once can be quite hard.
Yeah, I mean, I imagine fighting two supervillains is probably harder than fighting one.
Yep. And at one time, they used to be one. They're sister and brother, but they used to be combined into a supervirus named Gigabyte. But there was some type of explosion before the events of the show that I think gets explained in the fourth season that separated them. Although they do become Gigabyte at some point in the first three seasons.
So presumably, there's Megabyte, and then Hexadecimal is actually 1,023 megabytes, right?
Yeah, something like
that. So that way, when they combine, they form 1 gigabyte.
Yeah, gotcha, yeah. Which in 1993 was a formidable amount of data.
Yeah, that was an unheard of amount of anything, I think.
Yeah. There's also some other character that we're not really going to touch, but is named Kilobyte, but like Kill-a-Byte.
Okay. That checks out.
I think he had something to do with why they were combined or separated or something, but for our purposes today, we just need to know Hexadecimal and Megabyte.
Okay. I don't know Hexadecimal code at all. But I'll try and convert this entire episode to Hexadecimal once we're done. Maybe we'll just like pull the transcript, convert it all to Hexadecimal, and you guys can enjoy it at home. Or I guess Hexadecimal can enjoy it from whatever internet space she's living in these days.
Yeah, we'll get Peter to translate this into ones and zeros and just speak for 32 hours of all the ones and zeros that corresponds to all of the script here.
Yeah, yeah. That seems fair to me, considering he missed this episode to get his rocks off. So,
yeah. So these are most of the main characters, and the story is driven by the interactions of the good and the bad guys, but then also the events in the world caused by the user. So when you boot up your PC and you do something, it has an impact on these things that are living within your computer.
Yeah, so I work in the games industry, as you know, yep. James. We kind of work at the same company.
Yep.
And I had an old test lead back when I was a video game tester, who anytime we'd get a new build would paste this image that they had of a big purple cube with the white text that said game incoming. And I learned after like a year or two that that's from Reboot, apparently.
Yeah. So that's pretty much the MacGuffin in the first season anyways. That's what keeps the thing going, I guess. It's not like a ring where everybody's chasing after this, but there would be no plot without the incoming game every episode.
Yeah.
You get the big alert saying, warning, incoming game, warning, incoming game. And this purple cube descends onto a part of the city. And this is when the stakes are really high. And whoever is in the cube becomes part of the game.
Yeah, they're like trapped in it, right? Until...
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And so someone who... And they all have like these little badges that have a triangle... and another triangle kind of mirroring each other in the middle.
Okay.
It's like the Reboot logo that you'd see if you look up Reboot logo. It's a circle with two triangles that are split and mirrored.
Okay.
And they say Reboot, and they touch it, and goes beep beep, and they go into the game, and they become one of the AI in the game that is fighting against the user.
Oh, okay. So they're not, and this is just season one, so they're not fighting viruses yet? Like, they're just...
So that's part of it. Like, they're fighting viruses like outside of the game, but the real whenever a game is incoming, it's the user that's doing it.
Okay, yeah.
And the real thing that's important about this is that if the user, any sprites and binomes who are under the cube just become an NPC.
Yeah.
Anyone who adds a reboot thing becomes like a more useful NPC. Like, they might become a boss in the game or something like that.
Okay, yeah. I do like the idea that it's like, hey, there's a game coming, and they need NPCs, so stop trying to protect the user's banking information and their social insurance number. we better just hop in there and pretend to be, you know, Jeff, who runs the armor store.
Yeah.
Drop everything. Like, oh, really? Okay, because I was hoping that, you know, I could keep their PayPal secure, you know, the user's got a couple kids, we know, because they keep uploading those pictures of their kids, but... Yeah.
You know, you stop in the name of Skyrim.
Yeah. Stop. You violated the law.
Yeah. So they become part of the game. So like, let's say the game was Mario and it came down. The user would be Mario, and then the sprites or binomes would be the Goombas or the Koopas trying to stop the user from completing the game.
Okay.
And the win condition for the user, which is, it really sucks, but if the user wins, all the sprites and binomes who are in the game become nullified, which is a fate worse than deletion.
Okay.
They get turned into little worms. Any part of the city that was in the game when the user wins gets destroyed.
Okay.
Yeah.
I see now. So, now I'm starting to doubt that this is actually how computers work.
Okay. Yeah, this is the save game, dude. If you make it to the first save point, you got to delete your banking information to save
exactly.
your game.
That is true, yeah.
Yeah.
And then you got to scoop all the worms out of your computer.
Yes. And these worms, like, we don't really know what they're used for, except they, like, end up working with hexadecimal a little bit later on that we'll talk about. But
so I know a worm is a type of virus. It's like a Trojan or like a worm is one of those like mid-90s to mid-2000s hacker terms that you'd hear in movies all the time. Like, oh, I got to upload the worm to the database.
Okay.
But I think it was worm salt with a Y, not with like an O.
Okay, so. I don't think they're specifically called worms or slugs. They're just like, they're called nulls. Okay. I just called them worms because they look like worms.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
The sprites don't get nulled, right?
Oh, yeah, they do. So the stakes are high.
Okay, but then presumably there's no episodes where... the user ever. This is just a really shitty gamer. This is a fake gamer girl who like just can't beat a video game to save their life.
Yeah, for like the first very long time, the user never wins a game. And like there's always a way that even like sometimes the viruses accidentally get put into the games and they have to work alongside Bob Dot or Enzo to beat the user.
That's classic Saturday morning cartoon material, yeah. Right there. Like, oh, you know, let's do this episode where we have I'm trying to think of the bad guy in He-Man, Skeletor. Yeah. Let's have Skeletor work with He-Man this episode, you know, because they gotta achieve a common goal or whatever.
That's a crazy episode too that I want to do one day. Is He-Man, He-Man and Skeletor?
Yeah,
dude. You know, he's living in Skeletor's old house, and all Skeletor wants to do is just move in back to where he used to live.
Grayskull Manor.
That's
Castle Grayskull?
Yeah, Castle Grayskull. Yeah. What? Just stole his house. All the dude wants is his house back.
Yeah.
I think he's the true hero.
If any of the listeners out there want to take a crack at writing us a He-Man script, maybe we can adapt it for a future episode, too. But yes, stay tuned. Or get at us if you want us. If you do want us to talk about it, reach out to us on Twitter or Discord and let us know.
So that sets the stage. We kind of know the main players in the game, what happens when the user tries to do anything, what the consequences are in games, and why they have to beat them as the AI. Mm-hmm. So we can start
a fate worse than death.
Yeah,
awaits them basically. So.
Yeah, if you get deleted, you can get restored. If you get nullified, there's not much you can do.
Okay, so it's like, yeah. So if you get I don't know how do characters get deleted in the reboot world in Mainframe?
It's not really mentioned, other than at one point there's a system restore and someone who was gone gets restored. So I don't know how deleted is never really talked about.
Yeah.
it's just said that nullified is worse than deleted, so I'd imagine you can get restored somehow. Yeah. If you were deleted.
So if you delete something, it's like your mom deleting something on her computer where she deletes the shortcut into the recycling bin. And if you get nullified, it's like an actual, you go into control panel and you remove program.
Yeah. So season one, we're going to brush over pretty quickly. There's not much that goes on like story-wise because everything's really episodic. It's meant that, like you said, Saturday morning, you wake up, you pour your bowl of cereal, you just watch a show, and any problem that's brought up at the beginning of the show is resolved by the end, and everybody's happy.
Yeah. You pour your bowl of cereal, which is probably branded in some way with one of the cartoons that you plan on watching that morning.
Yeah.
A nice big bowl of He-Man balls, right? We all remember eating those as kids.
I love those. Yeah.
It's weird to make a kid's cereal so salty, though. I gotta be honest.
It's weird. It was kind of cool though, the oatmeal that you would pour and the dinosaurs would come out.
Yeah.
For that one, you pour the milk in and it would become thick and gloopy.
Yeah. It's like any good oatmeal, right?
Yeah, exactly. Just coagulate immediately. Yeah. So season one, not much happened. It was super off the wall and like kind of what made the show great. Like, there's one episode where they're trying to plan for Enzo's birthday party, and Dot gets Bob just to keep Enzo busy the whole time. And then at the end, there's a giant guitar battle between Megabyte and Bob.
Hell yeah.
It's a sick guitar battle, too.
A modern retelling of The Devil Went Down to Georgia.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah. So like Megabytes like has all these ones and zeros spying on them, like what are they up to, because they're planning something. It ends up being a birthday party, so he comes down. He has this giant green guitar and he plays a sick solo. Bob has like his he has a watch that does things called Glitch, so
okay,
it's like his go-go gadget, whatever.
He causes a glitch and he gets the whatever Mary Sue powers he might need for that episode.
Yeah, it was the 90s, so he said Glitch, BFG, and a big effing guitar shows up.
Did he actually say BFG?
Yeah, he says BFG.
Hell yeah, that's so good.
Yeah. And then the guitar shows up, and him and it's a 3-minute guitar battle in a 20-minute show, so it's so sick. At the end, they both like end on a screaming note, and then Gigabyte gives Enzo the green guitar for his birthday and goes away, and it's a happy ending.
Okay, yeah. So, I mean, when we said true evil or chaotic evil, maybe not so much. I don't know. Maybe he's more just true neutral.
Yeah. In that one, this season one, like a lot of crazy shit happened.
Yeah.
They weren't like really true to anyone's like motives or anything. Like it was just episode one offs. So that was the Wild West days. Honestly, it was really cool. I've watched a few clips today, and tonight I may just like watch a couple episodes just for old time's sake.
I mean, it's fully what you want out of like a kid's show, right? Like,
yeah.
And like I get the idea with like growing up with the show. So like I know you haven't watched Avatar: The Last Airbender, which you should. But it's like it is purely a kid show, but it's quite good. And there's a ton of these like bottle episodes, you know, where it's just like there's no stakes. You know, like yes, the Fire Nation is about to destroy the world as we know it, but you know we have time for a beach episode, or we have time,
yeah,
to you know help these people get out of a canyon.
Have a birthday party with guitar battles. Why not?
And I know Avatar Legend of Korra gets a lot of flack for a lot of reasons, many of which are valid, many of which, you know, might be less valid. But it did, like, purely grow up because it was released, 6 or 7 years after The Last Airbender finished. So, it, like, it grew up with the audience, and it is, like, much more, like, through stories and fewer bottle episodes kind of thing. So, like, I get why Reboot would have done it, but if you're really just looking for a pure kids show, like, I think the bottle episodes just make so much sense. Like, hell yeah, let's do a guitar solo off episode, you know? Why the heck not?
And Reboot definitely moves toward, like, it ages with its audience a bit, too. By season three, there's a lot more mature themes, but season one, it was just purely a kids show, let's have fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if you looked this up or if you have this off the top of your head, but how long were the seasons roughly?
I have the wiki page here. I remember it was like 1993 to like 2001, I want to say. Let me see. Yeah, 2001. There's four seasons, and it took 7 years.
Okay.
So I got a couple years per season, I'd guess.
Yeah, I'm looking at just like a list of episodes. It seems like season three has 16. Season two has 10, so pretty short seasons for a kids show. Season one has 13, so it's cool that it managed to grow up that like that fast, and I guess it took that long. But like animation still today takes like a lot of man hours, so I can only imagine like starting in 1993, they probably had a really small team. It probably did take like a long time just to release seasons.
Yeah, I saw a clip of like how they animated the faces and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And it looks like you're looking at a graph with a bunch of different lines. And for whatever reason, when he grabbed one curve and moved it up and down, it would make the mouth move up and down.
Okay.
And so I guess it was like 10 different curves, and they all corresponded to different facial features or something like that.
Yeah. Well, yeah, the values of one curve is probably dependent on the values of another curve, right?
Yeah.
So like the X value in this curve actually equals the X value plus 2 in the other curve. So as you change that one, it changes.
So your eyes smile when your mouth smiles.
Aw. That's,
that's
a
how
real
you know.
Smile.
Yeah, that's how you know. It's all in the eyes. Season one, they could barely walk properly. Like to have them walk across the screen was really bad. By season three, they introduced things like eyelashes on characters. Pretty big stuff.
Oh, yeah. Think of the resources. Like, my gosh. Yeah. How much dedicated wham does an eyelash take?
I don't know. I don't know, dude. But right now, we just finished season one. There's no through lines yet. The through line starts to happen in season two. So we'll move on to season two. There was two new characters added. There was Andrea, spelt A-N-D-R-A-I-A, because like AI's capital in there, because she's an AI. Andrea.
AI.
Andrea. Yeah. I was calling her Andrala for so long because I didn't realize that was a capital I.
But you thought it was just a random capitalized A in the middle of the name?
Yeah, I don't know, dude.
Fair.
Internet's weird.
Something about capital I's and lowercase l's that just remind me of the other, right?
Yeah.
Maybe the fact that they're exactly identical.
Yeah, it seems like a flaw.
It does seem like a flaw, but so many fonts seem to do it. It just seems to be an accepted flaw in our society and by the font makers of our society.
Just like how the games wreck our computers every time we play them. We just let that happen.
Exactly. Every time you download Sarah Michelle Gellar naked boobies.jpg.exe, all your banking info gets stolen. So
nothing we can do about it.
We just live our life. Nope. I've long feuded with the font illustrators of the world. So it's no surprise that I'm ticked off at them still.
So Andrea is a game sprite, and she's the friend of Enzo. She's like, Enzo's pretty much the only young sprite in season one, so they added a friend for him in season two.
Okay.
Who's also a love interest, like, much later on.
Okay.
Yeah. Then there's Mouse. She's a freelance hacker with, she has like a southern drawl, which is really fun.
Is she very selective?
What do you mean?
Because you select things with a mouse?
Oh, no, she's like got pink skin and she has orange static hair.
Hell yeah.
Like I remember, I think this might have been like when I first got attracted to redheads.
Okay.
Because I was very young and I remember thinking that she was really cool and like in a way that I couldn't quite understand.
I mean, she's a warrior woman and I'm into warrior women, so.
Yeah.
I'm here for it.
She worked for Megabyte for a one-shot early in the season, but switches sides. So they never fully trust her, but she's a useful... she's useful.
A sellsword. Yeah. Mercenary.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
But with a southern drawl.
But with a southern drawl.
Exactly. Second season started as episodic, but later they started to make an arc, like, halfway through in the fifth episode. The episode Painted Windows. If you want to start somewhere where it's not episodic and just watch the whole show, Painted Windows is a good place to start.
Okay.
The arc reveals that Hexadecimal and Megabyte were siblings. We didn't know it up to this point. And introduced something that was an external threat to the mainframe for the first time. The web.
Oh, the World Wide Web?
Yeah.
Or like a spider web. World Wide Web.
Like the internets.
The internet?
Yeah.
All those surfer dudes are a threat to the mainframe.
There is an actual guy with a surfboard who's like a ripoff of the Silver Surfer later, and he surfs the web.
Surfs the web, of course he does, because it is the 90s, right?
Yep, he has to. Yeah. Magic Mike, the TV, after this episode where we find out that they are siblings, Magic Mike, the TV, spends time with Hexadecimal in her lair. And he somehow allows her looking glass to connect the web. She has like all those masks, so one of her things is she'd look in the mirror, and like every time you'd see the mirror, she'd be wearing a different mask to convey her emotion.
Okay.
But somehow it connects to the web, and it shatters, and a mysterious creature comes through and bonds with Hexadecimal.
So
this like tentacly thing.
Her mask shatters, or the internet shatters?
The mirror shatters.
Sorry.
Yeah. Well, one becomes the other, because her mask and her gets infected by this creature.
Okay. Is this when she kind of, like, goes full Joker?
Yeah, okay. Exactly. So then the worms, or these nulls that were left behind by games that were won by the user, which we haven't seen up to this point, but assumingly it happened whenever before Bob was here or something like that.
Yeah, or maybe, you know... user booted up Morrowind and then like alt tabbed out and like played a couple rounds of solitaire, and Bob was stuck in Morrowind while solitaire was just like nullifying all these different sections of Megabyte.
It's a small game, so it just takes out like little rooms
exactly,
at a time.
Yeah.
So that happened. She gets infected, and all of the little worms or nulls combine and like crawl onto her, and she becomes Nullzilla, which is like this pulsing multicolored bunch of worms.
Okay, cool.
It's grotesque.
Is it permanent?
The gang eventually defeats Nullzilla,
but does she turn back into
Hexadecimal?
Yeah.
Once she beats them, all the nulls go away or get destroyed. I'm not sure, but the web creature survives and moves on to Megabyte.
Okay.
So I guess that's the next episode. The first episode is sister gets infected. Next episode is Megabyte brother gets infected by the same...
Very original episode they got going there. Yeah.
Yeah. And the web thing forces and allows them to rejoin into their original form. Megabyte and Hexadecimal combine. into Gigabyte.
Gigabyte.
Yeah. Which is a massive amount of power to have in a single computer back in the 90s.
Yeah, I mean, again, heretofore unheard of. I don't know if mainframes in the 90s were even capable of storing a gigabyte, you know?
No, and they couldn't handle it. No sprite on their own could handle it. So what they did is they, a la Power Rangers, all combined into one giant thing. Like, Bob is the head, Enzo's the arm, Dot's the other arm.
Okay, like a very...
Magic Mike's the leg.
Like Power Rangers, like you say.
Very
Voltron-esque.
Exactly. And they combine and fight Gigabyte and eventually win, and they separate again.
Okay.
But Web Creature narrowly escapes.
Oh, still alive.
Still alive. Just they only managed to separate the two viruses from their super virus form.
And this is where they find out that there's a third sibling, and it goes to infect that sibling.
Good guess. Good guess.
Well, I thought I was seeing a pattern develop is all.
Yeah, no, it is. That was the pattern so far, but they couldn't go past two villains, I guess. They'd have to animate a whole new thing. So,
oh, true. Not worth the man hours.
Yeah. So instead, the web creature escapes and opens a portal to the web.
Okay.
So now, I don't know, it downloaded a browser.
Yeah. Or it downloaded LimeWire.
Yeah.
Kazaa.
So, like, what the portal looks like in Reboot World, which I remember being really scared of, it's like this pulsing portal filled with, like, mechanical tentacles, it looks like, okay. And, like, spiraling around. It's, like, really trippy. It's really, really trippy.
Sounds awful.
Yeah. I was, like, scared of it. My mom was probably vibing on it with her glass of wine or whatever when we were watching it back then.
Your mom's just on the couch, like, mood, honestly.
Yeah, and so now, all of a sudden, this opening into the web posed a threat for all of mainframe.
Okay.
Including the viruses.
Like Megabyte and not the null virus or whatever, but...
No. Megabyte and Hexadecimal.
Yeah,
so they had to team up. Because if mainframe wasn't safe, then there was no place for even the viruses to infect, right? If they got sent out to the World Wide Web, who knows what could happen out there.
Okay, yeah. It's like in Dungeons & Dragons, the devils don't want to, you know, necessarily destroy the material realm, because then they can't produce any more souls to enslave down in hell, so.
Yeah. Yeah, like even though they want to destroy, like they... They need something to destroy.
Yeah.
There's probably bigger fish out in the World Wide Web.
But maybe they just don't know that. I don't know.
Yeah. It's very mysterious, the World Wide Web, to all of us back then, 1993.
Even today, it still is. So.
Yeah.
Well, I still can't find a naked Michelle Gellar pic that doesn't infect my computer with dozens of viruses. So I keep trying, though. I'm going to keep trying.
Yeah. So what it looks like in mainframe right now is there's an army of CPU police, and they are the ones and zeros just dressed up and driving in circles, kind of like Three Stooges, like just trying to fight off these things.
The Bobbies.
Yeah. And Bob and Megabyte and the rest of the gang are trying to create a machine to close the portal to the World Wide Web.
Okay.
Yeah.
They're trying to fix the root of the problem rather than put out fires.
Yeah. The root, there's probably some sort of computer term there. I don't know if that was a joke that I missed, but...
No. I don't... I mean, yes, there probably is a pun there, but I wasn't trying to make one.
Okay. Oh, I see Peter's eyes bulging. He's trying to make it.
Oh.
We'll get it from him later.
Yeah.
So they have this machine... And this is the end of season two. They have something they're going to launch up into the World Wide Web portal to basically explode and close it. In the last minute, Megabyte steals Glitch off of Bob's wrist, crushes it, and pushes Bob into the machine as it's shot up into the portal.
Oh, no.
So the one Guardian is shot up into the World Wide Web. And it ends up saving mainframe, but at the cost of losing their guardian, Bob.
Oh, no.
So this is like a really dark cliffhanger that up to this point, the show had nothing like this.
Yeah.
Like the, The protagonist just got killed.
I mean, you could say that Reboot was the original Game of Thrones, right?
Yeah, they killed him. We didn't expect it at all.
Yeah, the young king did behead him.
He's not dead, per se, but he's lost. The World Wide Web's a big place.
Yeah, it's hard to get home. I mean, trust me. Yeah. You fall down a rabbit hole, you know, you end up on some weird site, just watching video after video. And
you know, loreboys.com, listen to a bunch of half-wits talk about video games.
Yeah, for hours, honestly.
Yeah.
Which in the eyes of a computer sprite is maybe a million years. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know how they perceive time.
There is time dilation, though. It's spoken in a game. Time goes faster than in the mainframe.
Okay, cool. Yeah. So they could solve the problem without too much happening outside. I guess if the viruses megabyte and hexadecimal don't get sucked into the game, then you need to kind of make it make sense why, like, oh, they were gone for 3 weeks and they didn't just like take over the whole city in that time, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So now we're on to season 3, and like I said, significant graphic updates. People have eyelashes now.
Oh, there's shit.
Shadows.
Whoa.
Yeah, it's crazy. Season, like, half the 90s went by before season 3 came out, I think.
Okay.
And there's a lot of work going on in terms of, like, graphics and stuff around those times.
Yeah, I mean, it never really slowed down, but it sounds like it started with Reboot, so.
Yeah. So with Bob gone, there wasn't a lot of people to take over the new role of Guardian. But Enzo actually ended up taking
over. He's but a boy.
And he was just but a boy. And he still has his backwards cap. And people mainframe did not really feel secure under the protection of just the boy. But he did his best.
I wonder why.
Yeah. Well, they're a bunch of ones and zeros. What do they have to say?
Yeah, I guess. We need a new Guardian. Here, use this small child. He'll protect us.
By the way, if you want a recap of season 3, at the end of season 3, they put on a musical within the show where the ones and zeros act as all the things and do a quick recap of everything.
Oh, yeah. Okay, cool.
I posted it into memes in the Lore Boys Discord, and I watched it today. It's still stuck in my head. It's really good.
And
they explain it all, so it helped me catch up on what happened.
Complete with eyelashes and shadows, presumably.
Yep. Yep. They rhyme the same words twice a lot. They rhyme guys with guys, but it's still quite good.
Okay. They could have said guys and lashes of eyes.
You're right. They weren't that self-aware, though.
Yeah, yeah. They needed me in the writing room, clearly, as a 2-plus-year-old boy.
Yep. 2-plus. Yeah, it could be as big as 8 at some points. Wow. Yeah. Well, he might have just been that young child who was forced in the role of Guardian, like Enzo, then. In season 3, every new game was for a new genre. So, one came down, and it's a horror game, and it's a ripoff of, I think it's a movie, Evil Dead.
That is a movie.
Yeah, it's a game based around that. They have the Necronomicon, they have all these different things like Jason and Freddy and all these guys coming through and making cameos.
You said horror, and then you said Jason, and my first thought was And the Argonauts.
No.
I was like, okay, sure. Presumably when they covered Kid Icarus.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. There's a golf game called Fairway Frolics with a bunch of tigers who play golf. Okay. Starship Alcatraz. It's like this big ship with sci-fi stuff going on.
A little Star Fox.
Castles and Knights. It's an RPG game. Like Mike the TV had a Viking helmet and a sword and a shield, and they had to do that type of stuff.
So when I looked up a picture of Mike the TV, I did see I saw him with a big sword, like a big Zweihander. Yep. So presumably it's from the Knights and Castles episode.
Yep. So one episode later down in the line, this is Enzo has a little bit of experience as the Guardian now. People are starting to gain it. He's gained their trust. He's done okay so far.
Hasn't been nullified yet. Not like that chump Bob.
Yeah, Bob's in the World Wide Web. At least he's not nullified. Nullified would be worse.
A fate worse than death.
Yeah.
Although the internet is also a fate worse than death, I'm sure. So. At least some corners of it.
Definitely.
Again, go to loreboys.com.
So one episode, the alert sounds, warning, incoming game. Warning, incoming game. And Enzo, along with Andrea and Frisket, are all in this game.
But not and the, Dot?
Dot's on the outside, looking in.
Okay.
Yeah. And she sees the thing come down. She sees Enzo go in. He's going to take care of it. He's the guardian. The user chose a game called Immortal Conflict, which is a ripoff of, can you guess? Conflict is spelled with a K, if that helps.
I don't know. I think that threw me off more than anything, but
it's a fighting game.
I will say My Little Pony Island Adventure.
Close, Mortal Kombat.
Oh, okay. Yeah, well, pretty close, yeah. I think Mortal Kombat was a spinoff, but sure.
Yeah, both developers had PTSD after animating the whole thing.
Yeah, but... yeah. For very different reasons, but yes.
Yeah. So it's Mortal Kombat, and for once, the user must have let his older brother play or something, because the user was kicking ass at this game.
Okay.
Yeah. So the user's playing as this Satan-type character. It's like this huge devil with fiery horns, and he's like super jacked, and the wheel spins to see who he's going to play up against, if it's going to be Enzo, if it's going to be Andrea or Frisket or one of the other AIs, and it lands on Enzo.
Okay.
And Enzo gets ported in.
Time for this small child to have his skull ripped out and then beaten with it, or whatever happens in Mortal Kombat.
Yeah, he comes up to like the Satan's waist, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's wearing a little tiny suit of Scorpion, and he has like the yellow over his mouth that he rips off because he's uncomfortable.
Okay.
Because this is way before you're supposed to wear masks.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there's no global pandemic. Why bother wearing a mask, huh?
Yeah. So they fight, and it's quite close, but at one point the user does get the upper hand. And his big demon claw swipes Enzo right down the left eye. And Enzo loses his eye forever.
Oh, because like now that you say it, I do remember he has like when we time jump, he's got the scar and like the milky eye, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He has a gold eye. It ends up being a technological eye later. But right now, he gets beat and the user won the game. Fuck.
Well, he's going to get nullified then.
Yeah. So in the very last moment, Andrea, being a sprite herself that knows AI, goes up to the reboot symbol and changes it. So it changes all of their format from guardian to sprite.
Okay.
Or from, and it just basically flips the colors and changes the shape a bit.
Okay.
And this means when the game leaves, they leave with the game and they aren't nullified.
Oh, but now they're stuck in Mortal Kombat land.
Yeah, which ends up just getting sent off into the World Wide Web. So like Bob, they're just going to be... It's an online game, I guess.
That's what
we could say, yeah. In 1993. But what happens is they just get like launched out of the computer into the World Wide Web.
Okay, yeah. Just but yeeted into the internet.
From the perspective of Dot, she sees the game come down. She's behind a control panel watching it. She sees Enzo lose, and she doesn't see them get turned into sprites. Right. All she sees is the user win, and this go up, and whoever got nullified, and she sees the worms.
A bunch of worms. Damn.
And it's a really emotional moment. I watched it today, and I got little shivers. Cause
Presumably, she was cursing herself for being a woman in the 90s, because that's presumably why they let the small child, male child, be guardian instead of her, is because she was a woman, so therefore could never have been guardian. Right.
To their credit, yes, that probably yes, but to their credit, yeah. Fong, the dude who's in charge of command.com, uh-huh, was training Dot to be the one to take over. So she was going to be like the computer administrator whenever he retired.
Yeah. A good safe office job for her.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like for now, she's a secretary.
Yeah. Yeah. That's it. The creepy old man was grooming her for a position or something like that. Something, something, something. I'm sure it's fine.
Yes, of course. So like I said, game time, it goes a lot faster than normal time. So they were stuck in this time, and Enzo and Andrea, that's why you see them as in season 3 as the grown-up versions of themselves, if you remember.
Yeah. Well, that's it. That's what I did remember was the time. That's all I remembered about the time jump. I didn't remember the actual event of a time jump. I just remembered seeing the little kid older. But I thought he was with Dot, his sister. But I guess you're saying he's with this little girlfriend that he had.
And she grows up, yeah. So, and she become, like, in their time together, they become lovers as they grow up together.
As you do, sure, yeah.
Yeah. They waited until they were exactly 18, and then they kissed each other on the mouth.
Yeah, or whatever the age of consent was in 1997, right?
Yes, exactly. So Dot thinks her brother's dead. It's a really emotional moment. She goes, like, Enzo, no! And, like, the screen cuts, and I watched that, and it gave me the shivers, and it was messed up. And it's super dark because they've never lost a game ever. And the first game they lose, it's like a small child in there. it was pretty bad.
I mean, not ideal, probably, yeah.
Yeah.
Probably should have trained the little kid to take over control, right? But
yeah.
Or command.com.
Coulda, shoulda, woulda. Yeah. So now the show like really took a left turn here. Because the small, lovable kid becomes this anti-hero named Matrix. His last name is Matrix. Dot's last name is Matrix. They stop calling him Enzo at this point, and he goes by Matrix.
Okay.
He carries a gun around, which he names Gun.
I mean, original. I guess he's a lot like... So, the inventor of the Ferrari, or the creator of the company Ferrari, was named Enzo Ferrari. And, you know, when he grew up, you stopped calling them Enzos, the cars. You started calling them Ferraris. So I think this makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. And Bob, he has Bob's damaged glitch as well. So it's not as like, it can't just summon a BFG, but maybe it can bring up a ukulele or something.
Yeah. Or a gun. A gun named
or
Gun.
A gun. A BFG, a big fucking gun. There you go.
Big freaking guitar. Thank you. Okay.
Oh, true. So the time spent in games and away from mainframe hardened both Matrix and Andrea. Matrix developed a hatred of viruses. Like, the whole reason he ended up losing his innocence was because Megabyte launched Bob off into the World Wide Web, which forced him into the early position of Guardian before he was ready, which made him lose his eye, which made him get separated from his sister and have to become a hard person before he was ready
to fall in love with this, you know, girl that saved his life. Awful.
Yep. Yeah. And she turns into a level-headed warrior. So he's like a shoot first, ask questions later anti-hero. And she's kind of like, hey, let's think about this Matrix.
Classic woman. Am I right?
Logical.
The guy's all gun. And here's the woman telling him not to shoot those innocent people, not to, you know, save the day from not real danger. Like, oh, God.
Yeah, so now instead of following mainframe, you're following Matrix and Angela, like, go through different games and different systems throughout the web. So it got really deep. Like, it went from a serial show that where you just, a game comes and we beat the game, we manage to do it again, to... No, this kid almost died, and now he's lost, separated from his family.
Lost on the internet, which is, there's definitely, like, an allegory there for, like, young children on the internet, right?
Yeah, you'll lose them.
Turning into these hard men.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think what I used
to... hard was the right word.
What I used to spend my time doing on the internet as a child, I think people have told me before it would make me lose the use of my eyes, so that kind of makes sense.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, so as the season progresses, Matrix's shift is not to find, like, his motivation is not so much to find home. Now it's to find Bob and then also go home.
Okay. He's like, while I'm here, I might as well find him first, right?
Yeah, it is. He is Bob's biggest fan. He looked up to Bob so much as a kid, and now he was strong enough to probably save him himself.
Yeah, now I have Gun.
Yeah. So he gets he meets a bunch of internet pirates who have a pirate ship called the Saucy Mare.
Okay.
And they're surfing the internet on their pirate ship. And Bob ends up finding him rather than the other way around.
Okay.
And it's a great reunion. Enzo as a kid, his thing was he used to always run up and just jump on Bob, and Bob would get flattened, like, in a cartoon sense, like, just... Like, you just jump on him kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And whenever they reunite, Enzo starts running and Bob stops him. Like, you're a little too big now.
Yeah, yeah.
You can't do that anymore. But it is cute. So now that they're together, they combine their resources to head back to Mainframe, which, when they get there, was left in charge of Dot and a woman and was completely destroyed.
Oh, come on. We were so ready to give you the benefit of the doubt. Oh.
Yeah. So Anthony actually wrote exactly that in his script, and I left it out. I was like, okay, I'm not going to call him out for being a woman, and it got destroyed. But it kind of naturally came up that way since we were talking about it. So the group reunites with Dot and the Resistance, and they go to fight back against Megabyte. Megabyte's not expecting Bob and Enzo to all of a sudden be back, so this is a great moment for them.
Nice.
Yeah. This is a pretty intense fight scene coming up. I watched it today, and for the 90s, it was badass. Matrix at last confronts Megabyte. He has all this burning hatred for viruses in him. He's been defeating viruses all over the World Wide Web. He's hardened now, and specifically Megabyte, he has a lot of hatred for. He's the one who started it all.
Yeah, and now he has a gun.
Exactly, he does have a gun. In the ruined principal office, which is like, I don't know what that would be, the CPU or something like that.
Okay, so you never went to the principal's office as a kid. Okay, Jamie, sure.
No, principal office, where Fong is being held captive.
Okay.
The virus was like initially taken, Megabyte was originally taken back by seeing Enzo.
Of course.
Enzo lifts up the gun and he's like, wait, the boy? and then he starts to like mock him as he once did when he was a child. Now Matrix, like the hatred is filling up his one eye and is not so much his other eye.
Mm-hmm.
And he readies his gun. And Megabyte says, like, put that gun down, because let's fight like real sprites.
Because I'm your father.
Yeah. It was Megabyte's actions that made him lose all of his innocence, basically. He could still be a carefree kid if it wasn't for this guy. So there's a lot of emotion in this fight. So Matrix throws aside the gun and charges him. And they begin hand-to-hand combat. And for the 90s, like I said, really cool scene. If you're interested, go look up like Matrix fights Megabyte, because it's cool. And after some sparring, Enzo takes the upper hand. But Megabyte, being a virus, didn't play fair.
Never
he
does.
lets out his Wolverine claws.
He pulls out his gun. as soon as Matrix throws his away, he's just like, you idiot, I got a gun too.
So Enzo's on the back foot now. He's like just barely parrying all of the clawed fights that Megabyte has.
Mm-hmm.
But Andrella was there, and she has a trident. Andrea, yeah, sorry, thank you. And she throws the trident to Enzo. So it evens the playing field. Matrix pulls back the trident, and then also Megabyte pulls back his...
Wolverine claws,
and they swing at each other. And what happens? Megabyte's claws break under the force of the trident.
Ooh, baby. Yeah. You in trouble now.
Yeah. And Megabyte falls to his knees, and then somehow he's on his back in the next scene. But Enzo, or Matrix now, lifts up the trident and strikes it down. The camera moves, and the trident's next to his head.
Classic.
Because even though he's like the anti-hero who's done some bad shit up to this point, he's not so low that he's going to like kill him in cold blood that, I guess. So
yeah, I mean, how could you know, kill somebody who's, you know, destroyed your home and, you know, almost killed your best friend or your idol and almost killed you, and yeah
and stole your childhood, all the rest of it.
But. Yeah, the guy deserves to live. That's all I'm saying.
So Megabyte takes this as an opportunity to escape. So he heads towards the net. He knows he can't survive in Mainframe, so he's willing to risk it. He'll go to the World Wide Web. Or it's weird, though. I think the web is bad, but the net is good. Like, they're both the internet, but one of them's a bad one, one's a good one. Like, okay. You don't want to go to the web because it's evil, but the net's okay because you can get to other places that way.
The web's the dark web, and the net is the internet.
Yeah, we'll say that. Yeah, so he tries to go that way, but Mouse, the hacker that's on our side now, rerouted him to the web. So he tries to go to the net, but he ends up in the web. and the web attacks him. A bunch of web, like, tentacle creatures, those swirling things I was talking about before.
Yeah. They're just like, do you want to buy a pair of real human eyes? And he's like, oh, fuck.
Yeah. I can get you spinal fluid for $10,000 a gram. But yeah, so Megabyte, in a last ditch effort, as he's about to die, triggers something called the system reboot of Mainframe. What this means, nobody knows. Everybody's life is in question, and nobody knows what's going to happen after the reboot. Mainframe waited with a pregnant pause, and the screen goes black.
Ooh.
Yeah. On a dark computer screen, a green message appears. System crash. Restart Y/N. It's blinking. Typing can be heard. Yes. Someone types yes. And then restore, yes or no. And then it says yes.
I love that there was all that typing and it's just Y on the screen.
Yeah. So, in a complete luck streak for them, the user was there and reboots the system and hits restore. And it restores the city back good as new with all the residents alive.
Oh, very nice.
Including Hexadecimal, who was saved by Bob and Fong by uploading her to the principal office. She's like more of a good guy than a bad guy by the end.
Okay.
Even though she's kind of crazy. Once they got the web thing out of her head.
The devil you know.
Yeah, exactly. In a romantic moment, Dot grabs Bob and says, never leave me again. And they share a passionate 3D kiss
as
the city comes to life around them. And then suddenly they hear someone yell, Bob. And they turn around, and he's flattened by the kid version of Enzo, a system copy of the original. He was backed up.
Oh, nice. So they just took away all his experiences without his consent, presumably.
Oh, but the new Enzo Matrix also exists.
Oh.
So now there's the kid version and the old version. They both exist going into season 4.
That's fucking weird.
It is. It's a challenging concept for the 90s. I like it.
It'd be a little unsettling if I just met the kid version of me, like, you little shit, still so full of fucking potential. Fucking resent him so hard.
Yeah. And that's the end of season 3, which sets the stage for season 4, which I'm not really going to get into. There's more of there, and it gets split into two movies with two different perspectives that are broken down into 12 episodes, and it ties up some loose ends with, like, some super virus that was going to come later.
Okay.
Some different factions that were on the web that they met. But the first three seasons are really what hold a special place in my heart. And from watching some clips today, I'm going to watch some more. it was a lot of fun. Reboot, the Guardian Code exists. I'd say don't watch it. There is a reboot of the reboot.
Yeah, I was going to say, I thought they do. Oh, that's 2018. That's the Guardian Code. Okay.
Yeah. They've been threatening to do it since 2007. Like every year or two, every year or two, they'd be put out a press release being like, we're going to do it.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they'd gauge on how much reaction they got from it. And like, oh, okay, there's not enough interest. We won't do it yet.
Okay.
And then eventually in 2018, there's enough interest. They did it. It was live action. It had none of the original characters, maybe a cameo or two. And it wasn't even released in Canada at first, which
seems kind of fucked up, right?
Yeah, so I watched like some YouTube videos of like the real fans of the old stuff, and nobody accepts the new reboot as being part of the reboot universe.
Non-canon.
So, yeah, we won't accept it either. But the first three seasons, and even the fourth, apparently can be quite good.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, and that's Reboot.
I probably won't end up watching it, but for anybody who likes the show, just go find those pirate surfing guys or whatever, and I'm sure you can find some episodes of it.
They say something in the show to say something's really cool or good, and they say it's alphanumeric. And I'd say the show is very alphanumeric. It's great.
Alphanumeric. Yeah. I wouldn't have guessed that would be the thing that means cool, you know?
Yep.
I would have thought...
That's what they say.
I would have thought, like, I don't know, cool, because you want to keep your computer cold. Or, you know...
Oh, yeah. Cool means cool in computer land.
Totally processed, my dude.
Yeah,
you know?
Oh, dude, that's defragged as fuck.
Yeah. Oh, dude, I'm having trouble rendering that. Oh, man.
Yeah, there's a lot of like adult jokes in the show too from like the few clips that I watched, so I think it still could be funny today. And if you're nostalgic for it, go check it out with those pirate boys.
Yeah. If you want to get in touch with us, like I said earlier in the show, contact@loreboys.com. There's also links in the description of this episode, so to all the Discord, the iTunes reviews, everything is there. So if you want to leave us an iTunes review, we super duper appreciate it. It would be totally alphanumeric of you if you did that. So yeah, head over to iTunes, leave us a review. We'll read it on air at some point in the near future, as soon as we think to check and notice it, basically. If you want to reach out to me, you can find me on Twitter. I'm at Ethan the Dead Man. Pete is at Pete O'Donohue.
No, old Aunt Peter.
I think he's old Aunt Peter on Instagram.
I don't know who he is.
And Jamie, where can we find you?
Just go to loreboys.com/ebout. About, not ebout. But that's where you can find me, is on the Discord. I've been doing a lot of posts on the Facebook recently, so just check out the Lore Boys on Facebook. If you drop us a follow there, we've been picking up a little bit of steam, so we're posting a lot, so it'd be cool to see you there. And if you're in the Discord, I already posted some cool ass reboot videos before this even went live, so you would have already seen that whole recap of season three and the Bob and guitar duel with Megabyte. It's sick.
We do have a Patreon, patreon.com/theloreboys. Again, the link is in the description for this episode. You can also find it at theloreboys.com or loreboys.com. So if you want to support us, we'd super appreciate it. Also, if you want to support us and you don't trust Patreon, we have always offered an alternative, which is Loreboys Prime. And this week, I was on vacation last week. I went to a cottage in rural Quebec, and there was a ton of worms. And I knew we were going to be talking about computer worms, so I got a bunch of buckets of worms. And then we did this episode, and I realized that they may not be good for your computer, but I'm going to let you guys be the judge of that. So if you agree to send us your old cans for recycling, you know, 5 cents a pop here in Quebec, and if we decide to head to Michigan, I think it's 10 cents US a can, so maybe we can find a way to make that financially feasible. But just send us your old cans and bottles, and we'll give you a pocket full of worms.
I've been gaming a lot lately too, and they just keep, every time I win a game, they crawl out of the fan and everywhere, so
yeah,
we need to get rid of these things.
Well, it's kind of like a nice little reward. You win a game and you get a worm because it pops out of your computer because there's no space, because now it's deleted other things in your computer, and of course it's generated more worms inside of your computer. And then
technology.
Yeah, it's just worms all the way down, right? And I guess that would constitute
Lore Boys.
Oh,
it's alphanumeric.
Alphanumeric. 1-800-Flowers.com is more than your birthday, anniversary, or just because gift-giving destination. We put our hearts into everything we do to help you celebrate all life's special occasions with friends and family. From our farmers and bakers, florists and makers, everything from 1-800-Flowers is made with love every step of the way, because we know that nothing is more important than delivering a smile. To learn more, visit 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST. That's 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST.